Welcome to Bitch Talk, booze interviews straight from the heart of San Francisco. This is Erin. You can find us at bitchtalkpodcast.com. You can find us at bff.fm every Monday morning from 5:30 to 6. You can also find us Sunday, September 8th, helping to promote the show at Cobb's Comedy Club called Really Funny Comedians Who Happen to Be Women. That lineup is Irene Tu, Natasha Muse, Sandy Steck, and hosted by Chelsea Bierce. We also hear that there's going to be some fun drop-in comedians, so please get your tickets. It's cobbscomedy.com where you can find those tickets, so please support. We are heading into part two of our interview with W. Kamau Bell, which was about this time last year, and he graced us with his presence for about 45 minutes, and we had a great chat with him. This was also our 300th episode release, so please enjoy this part two, and I'll see you on the other side.
We at Bitch Talk are, like many people in this world, huge fans of Anthony Bourdain. And to be given the slot right after him, did that give you some added pressure or some confidence because they had the confidence in you to follow him?
I mean, it was both. It was like, oh my God, they must believe in the show. Because Jeff Zucker was clear. He's like, I'm going to give you the slot after Bourdain. And I sort of was like, what? And he's like, well, if you don't want it, I'll give it to somebody else because that's the number one slot. And I was like, no, I'll take it. But also, like, the show's got to be good. And so, but also it made me feel like, you know, he was the cool kid at CNN. Like, you know, and, you know, a lot of people at CNN think they're cool kids. And they, you know, like, Anderson Cooper's a cool kid. Mm-hmm. And you know, Don Lemon's a cool kid. Yeah. And, you know, Angela Rye's a cool kid. Van Jones. So there's a lot of, like, sort of, like, cool kids right there, but he was the coolest of the cool because he needed it. It was like not something that he was like, he was got to do his own thing. He was not taking assignments from the news. And so to be linked in some way, and plus people assumed that because we were following each other, that we were friends. Mm-hmm. And we really didn't become friendly until we went to Nairobi this past February and taped an episode of his show.
I heard your Fresh Air interview, mm-hmm. and I was choking up in my car, and I was having a weird day. I was thinking about him a lot, mm-hmm. and then your interview came on, and I'm sitting in my car crying. But beyond you getting to have that very special time with him, do you think he had any kind of sense of his impression on the world? Because we're just a couple of Asian American kids from, you know, I'm from here, she's from LA,
yeah.
And... do you think he knew the effect he had on people? Or understood?
I mean, at some point, everybody sort of, you hear from people. Like, I was with him, and people would come and be like, oh my God, dude, I love you, I love the show. Like, it was funny to be like, oh yeah, he's more famous than I am. Like, I don't think about it, but it was like, people were like, oh, your show's good too. But they were like so enthralled with him. And this is, we're in Kenya, you know, we're not in, it's like in America, we're like on the other side of the planet. They're like, they people of all ages, races, creeds, cultures, religions were just felt like he was showing an authentic piece of the world, without getting in the way of it. And especially as a white man who does that, as a white cisgender mm-hmm. heterosexual man, especially an older guy, mm-hmm. like who's not supposed to get it. Those guys generally don't get it.
No.
That they felt like he had an opinion, but he was getting out of the way. Like he was like he. You definitely felt like you knew who he was, but he wasn't letting who he was get in the way of your taking in this authentic experience, and also making people go, I want to go to that place he went to. Like I've talked to many people, like I planned my honeymoon around to open episode.
Made you less afraid.
Yeah, people don't do that with the Klan. I planned my honeymoon around.
I did.
Yeah. So
I can't wait to sit down with them.
Yeah. I'll give you some numbers. But
yeah, that cross burning was really something.
Yeah, you really want to take in.
Maybe they have a like, little dinner.
Like an amusement park dinner theater. Yeah. Yeah. That would actually be great and people would do it.
Well, actually, you did make me want to go somewhere, which I have been very briefly. But first, I wanted to ask, do you get paid more for your show when you dance on the show? Because you should. And if you don't, you need to seriously talk to your manager or whatever.
Yeah.
Because when you
bonus.
Dance on that, when you were dancing in Puerto Rico, I was like, take me there right now. Because he broke it down.
Hips don't lie. Yeah,
the HBCU, you danced in that episode as well. Yeah. But no, Puerto Rico specifically, no, I was like, oh my God, I want to be in that dance circle.
Well, I mean, that was, so first of all, that is my two older daughters, because my month-old daughter doesn't watch my shows. Which
not
I
yet. But
my two older daughters, Sammy and Juno, like, because I was away. When that show, I was away when that show was about to air or something. I wasn't at home, And so the show aired and they saw the commercials for it and they flipped out with excitement and joy.
You were dancing?
Watching me just like, because, you know, I'm a goofball. They know me to be a goofball, but to see me like go that, because I went all out. I really was like, I might hurt myself. I'm okay. I'm
you were feeling the energy of the
and
people.
Also, it was like, I realized what, like, the whole thing, me and it was the woman who'd been Miss Puerto Rico, like, had this whole, like, where we sat down and had some food, and we talked about colorism in Puerto Rico and da da da. And then this bus pulled up that we didn't plan, like, it wasn't something we had staged. And I was like, oh, what's that? And she's like, oh, they come out and they dance and they did it. And it just took over the whole scene. And suddenly we were in the middle of it. And I think they could also see the cameras were focused at me. So those people were like, we'll focus on, let's pull that guy into the circle.
Yeah, and you stood out.
I stood out. Yeah. And I'm 6'4", 200 blah, blah pounds. And 178 pounds.
Right. I thought it was, your high school weight.
180.
With a burrito.
180. Yeah. Midnight burritos. But I sort of like, at this, it's like, it's a singular experience. And you sort of go, I can either say no, I'm fine, or I can totally go all in. And for me, for the show, I, as often as possible, I try to go all in. And so that was like, and I knew this is ridiculous, and I look like awful in a hilarious way. Like, but I'm actually trying. But I also know that like I'm just there's a lot of jiggle.
No, it was amazing.
It was so for me. And it
Lisa
was just
Ling
fun.
Couldn't have done that. Was, right. That's the thing.
She wouldn't have.
And Bourdain wouldn't have done.
No,
like, you know, there's
not.
Just
no.
Like, and for
absolutely
me, like,
not.
That's the thing that we that I like. That's my version of making a show like this. Like, yeah. That's my, like, because I'm a comedian and because I want to have a good time and because I don't have much shame around stuff like that. It's like, it's just, it was fun. And it's also a thing, like, if no cameras had been there, I would have done it and had fun. But because the cameras are on, you're like, I'm just going to go for it. You know? Like,
you only live once. What are you going to do?
And the fact that my daughters, that's their number one favorite thing I've ever done.
Like, that
if they had
so
to put a top
10
list together, that'd be maybe number one or two. And so for me, like, knowing that my kids connected to it is also pretty amazing. Yeah.
I love it.
We're going to have to wrap up soon.
Why? I want to keep talking.
Dude, okay, well, hey, it's your show.
You're a busy man.
I don't know
what kind of calls you have coming in.
I listen to what Kamau tells me. He wants to keep talking.
Yeah, we can talk for a little while longer. I'm good.
Okay. They said 30, so I'm just...
Oh, we can... Know. Let's go 45.
Oh,
so yes!
Me. All right, well,
all
anyways,
right,
let
now
me
we can turn
to
over to these
things.
Questions.
No.
yeah, make sure we get all the questions you want.
Now we're getting to the 50 Shades questions.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No. I want to talk about the Me Too movement in comedy.
Let's wrap it up.
No, I mean...
I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. I would have said that no matter what you said.
Okay,
no,
okay.
That's just the joke that was sitting right there.
Well,
it just so happens that it was...
And that was it. See you later. Let's go to Benny.
He just, the audio's like, come out, where are you going? Come back.
He's running out of room.
Who wants that onion volcano?
Yeah, well, who doesn't? You said in a recent article, or somewhat recent, men are allowed to take up too much space in society, and now we're at a point where people have to go, we're not going to allow you to take up that space.
Mm-hmm.
With the Me Too movement and comedy, because the other day I was talking to someone, I was like, what happened to that guy? Where's he been? Or what happened to that guy? You're not going to hear from him ever again. I mean, how has the comedy landscape changed in your opinion? Or is it better? Is it worse? Is this a good thing?
I mean, I think the Me Too movement is certainly a net plus, you know, overall. There's no question in my mind. And I think part of that means, like, for example, if you look at somebody like, if you're specifically talking about comedy, like, that's okay, just for the sake, if we talk about Bill Cosby, Louis C.K., Aziz Ansari.
Yep. I wasn't going to name the names.
God, we've spoken of all these on Bitch Talk multiple times.
So you look at Bill Cosby, and it's like, forget to take his age out of it for a second, just about, like, well, he's an old man, he's done anyway. But, like, there's no coming back from that. Like, we're talking about horrible, heinous, like,
years,
if he'd done one of the things he said that we all believe he did, that's bad. But there's many, many years of horror. Then you go to Louis C.K. and you go, ew, gross, 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 gross. Then you go to Aziz and you go, I saw a lot of difference of opinion on that article that was written.
Right. Mm-hmm.
By any difference of opinion, because sometimes if there's a man, I'm like, I'm just going to shut up and let and find out what
and
where
listen.
We're all landing and listen. And then you see, well, I respect this woman and I respect this woman or these women, and they have a difference of opinion of this. So for me, we're still in the middle of who gets to come back. or how people get to come back. Do you get to come back and sort of reclaim your throne where you were, or do you come back at a lesser level, or do you now, or now are you just allowed to be a behind the scenes producer, or are you banished forever? You know, so I think it's hard to know, because even though Aziz, I think, like, there was a, it was a, there was a lot of bad press, but eventually it seemed like it settled, and people were like,
it was.
That it seems was, like they had. Seems like there's. Yeah, we've all been
on that. We've all been on that multiple times. Yeah,
and we've all, as a man, I've been on both sides of that date. You know, like, and now it's different because I'm a man and I'm physically strong. So I don't. It's not the same power dynamic if I'm on the I want to leave and this person doesn't want me to leave. But I've certainly been on like a how do I get out of here?
Yep.
You know.
Yeah.
And so, but it's different. It's totally different. So it's just that I've been on so. And I like, I've been watching a lot of Netflix because my special's out, and I'm always like seeing, am I unpopular on Netflix now? Am I trending now?
Yes, you are.
Am I
in?
And so, and I go, Master of None is unpopular all the time. Like, it stays at least on my algorithm. And I've never watched it on my Netflix. So I'm like, oh, it's so it tells me. And Netflix is sitting somewhere going, it's still popular. So that means people are watching it. Which the business ultimately is a part of this too. Who determines they're going to be like, Aziz, we're ready for season three because the business says that we're ready for season three. But so I think so my thing is like, I don't think we know, but we haven't seen him come. Maybe when he comes back up, the culture goes overwhelmingly goes, yes, we've missed you. Or maybe when he comes back, enough people go that he has to. We don't know. And I think it's hard to answer these questions like what does it mean? What is happening? Because we're still in the middle of the thing. Like it's like the. It's we're still in the middle of sorting through this, and maybe we don't know what happened for another 10 years because Aziz is in his 30s, Louis C.K. is in his 40s, maybe he's in his 50s now. You know, these people are still around. You know what I'm saying? Like with Bill Cosby, it's like we can pretty sure that's a wrap. That's but we have yet to see the comeback. For anybody, and some of these people are going to try to come back, you know, and I don't, and I can't answer what that means, but I do feel like, you know, thank God the conversation's happening, and at the same time, me and my friend Dwayne talk about this all the time because of like think about the Aziz situation. There's a lot of room for debate about what that happened,
right?
But it may mean at the end of the day, the disease feels like that disease is like that disease doesn't come back. That maybe he sort of like. Transitions to something else or becomes a producer and he doesn't, but who knows? And we can just debate about whether that's right or not. But I think some dudes are going to just go down because right now there's a lot. It's sort of like it's all happening. You know what I'm saying? It's like you get caught
because
up
of the timing,
the timing and the shrapnel. And it's just the it's necessary. It's sort of like casualties of war. You know, no dude that I know can escape cleanly from the Me Too conversation because we've all had moments like even if the Aziz thing is an example of like, even though there's debate, maybe he doesn't come back or maybe he comes back in a different way. Well, we've all been in that. Every dude I know has been in a version of like, I thought it was cool, you know, like, and so, and that includes me. So it's like, if in some sense it's like, well, what would I do if some woman that I was like, I thought Kamau did this, da da da. And I'm like, but I thought, I would have to also go, well, I guess it's my, you know what I mean? Like, it's like Al Franken, another comedian turned, you know, it's funny how we forgot.
Politician
that seems like
also.
10 years ago.
Yeah.
If he was a comedian, maybe he could have gotten away with it in a different way. But maybe. As a politician, especially when you're the voice of authority, of moral authority. But for me, it's like, I had friends who were like, who were liberals who were like, I don't want Al Franken to go away.
I was like,
he has to go. You're just like, we can't. If this is what the moment is,
he's not bigger than the moment.
Which is sad because on the other end, our president and other people on the other side, they didn't have to go. But it was because we have a moral conscience.
We have a moral, but I feel like we have to like.
How do we get rid of that? Can you teach us? Can you have an episode on that?
We have 10 minutes.
Where do you travel for that?
How do we get rid of? Let's go someplace. So let's go to the White House and find out how you live without a moral conscience.
We'll stop now and go.
Yeah. So I mean, but I think the other side of this is that Al Franken has to go because I feel like all of this is the culture getting stronger to sort of finally deal with the Trump thing. To like these are all sit-ups and push-ups to go, okay, but this is a much bigger problem than the rest of this. Like, but because he's the president and the way politics works and because our elected officials don't have a stomach for actually real confrontation with each other, it's going to take longer.
Although yesterday's hearing was really interesting.
I haven't seen that yet. Yeah, yeah. Oh. I heard about. No. But
go
I just,
watch it.
I heard. I heard there was some back and forth. I just like, it's yeah, good.
There's a lot. Well, there were people clapping in the like in the press gallery when people were talking up and when he was talking up, which was interesting.
That
so.
Is who, and it was the there, FBI.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's always good. It's so funny to me right now that there's this whole Robert Mueller, like the FBI will save us. Which is not
scary.
Exactly how people of color have felt historically right, exactly. about the FBI. The FBI will take care of this.
That shows how desperate we are,
the
though.
The FBI is here. It'll be fine.
You would think they'd step up.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to get that big baby, that big Trump baby that they flew in London. I want to get that over here. Amazing. I will chip
in
for that.
Did you see the clip of the woman talking on Piers Morgan yesterday?
No.
Oh, I try to stay away from him.
I mean, it was just, yeah, he's horrible. He's basically their Trump. He just didn't run for. Yeah, he's terrible. But she's like, he's doing the thing that people on the right do all the time, like accuse everybody on the left of being in lockstep. And he's like, why would you be against Trump and his immigration policies, but you weren't against Obama? She's like, I was against Obama. Well, why weren't you protesting? And it's like, well, because the moment was different. And he's like, well, you're hero Obama. And she goes, I'm literally a communist, you idiot.
Yes.
And I just was like, she was like, it's not a left right debate.
Right.
Yeah. So,
With your Emmy nominations now, and I'm assuming you're going to be filming some more of.
Yes,
United
we
Shades.
Start working on pre production very
okay.
soon.
Okay. Yeah. Are you going to be possibly attacking more of what's going on in DC, or
exploring.
Every episode is basically like right. a what went wrong in America conversation. And right. as much as we tried to in season three steer clear from like just bringing Trump into it, if we didn't have to, you just have to. Because there's basically, for every societal ill, there's a clip of Trump saying something about
there's
it
a that, connection
that makes
yeah.
it worse, you know. So. So yeah, but we're certainly the way I think of the show is like it's a comedian's investigation with what went wrong in America, and a lot of that comes out of DC. And we're actually talking about doing a DC episode mm-hmm. about what it's like to live in Washington DC. It's basically nobody thinks about it. It's basically like a factory town, but the factory is politics.
Right.
And so a lot of people work in Washington DC, and they work for every administration, no matter who it is, because it's just it's like we used to make Ford Fiestas, and now we make Ford Tauruses.
Yeah, it's like the hamster running on the wheel.
Yeah, it's
but
just like
for...
it's not, yeah. So I don't really necessarily care who's there because I just have to like make sandwiches. My job is to make sandwiches for whoever's in the Oval Office. Mm-hmm. So we're actually talking about doing it. And also, there's a lot of activism in DC,
yes.
and mm-hmm. DC is a city that we don't think about enough, in some sense, like Puerto Rico, like taxation with no representation. Like they don't have a senator, they don't have a congressperson. Yeah.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, no. There's
it's so weird.
It is totally weird. It's its own, it's not a state, it's a municipality or whatever. So it's not, and so you think, so for example, DC, I know at one point, I don't know what's happening now, DC, the city, voted to legalize marijuana, and the federal government said, nope.
Hmm.
So it's like they because the federal government runs DC. They're like basically in charge of DC. So it's there's a lot to talk about there.
Are you gonna try and get His Majesty on your show at all?
Trump?
If you're gonna go to DC,
people ask that. I want to have good conversations with people. And the thing I'll say about Richard Spencer,
not possible.
As much as he's a pitiable, like just sort of like his ideals are horrible. He actually can have a conversation.
He's spoken.
He's spoken.
He
knows how to have the tennis match of a conversation.
Yeah, he's got crazy eyes, but he's
I did,
spoken.
Had to know how to, like, the ones who wanted to talk to me did. The ones who didn't stayed away from me.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Trump. There's no evidence that Trump's able to have a conversation.
No, it's like Tourette's. It's like
he won't even do a press conference. He hasn't done any press conferences, official press conferences.
Right.
So for me, it's like I have no interest in, because that only works out poorly for me. Because then because he won't have a conversation. He'll just monologue. I won't be able to get a word in edgewise. And then all the people are going to be like, why didn't you punch him in the face? Like, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
You'll get pissed on from both sides.
Why didn't I want to go to federal jail for the rest of my life? I don't know, guys. I don't know.
Well, having traveled around with your show, at least watching it for me, does give me some sense of hope. Do these issues seem a little easier to solve having traveled and spoken to all these people across the country? Or are you just like, fuck?
No, I think the thing that when you talk, no matter who you talk to, and this is even weirdly true of the Klan, that the basic issues are I either don't have a job and I want a job, or I have a job and it's not good enough. I want my kids to have better schools. I want my neighbor to be safer. Everybody wants the same stuff. It's just we get broken up into the team sports of politics. And then politicians use are the things that separate the things that are make us different as ways to divide us. So Trump is using the Klan members, sort of like those, sort of this aspect of white people are like, I just feel like as a white person, I'm supposed to be more successful. And he goes, yeah, you are. You know, like he sort of plays into that, and that makes I should be, which means not. And if other people are successful, that's we need to take them out of this country because I need to, because I'm not. And it's like, and he plays into that, which gins up the base, as they say. So for me, it's like if you could get the team sport of politics, left right, like especially the left right dichotomy that doesn't really exist, you could actually talk about real issues in this country. So, but unfortunately, because of the way we've set up the especially the presidential thing. There's no way to nobody can be like, I'm just a good person who's running for president and I don't have a political affiliation. You just can't.
You can't do it.
Then you're nothing.
Right. Yeah. And you got to take that corporate money.
Yeah. Just to get into the conversation. Yep. It's like you got to take the corporate money. You have to have $500 million just to sit down at the running for president conversation. Mm-hmm. And you can't get there without first. Are you a Republican or a Democrat? You know. Mm-hmm. I'm a Democratic socialist. No. Are you a Republican or a Democrat? Right. You know, like you I'm conservative, but I have liberal. Are you? You know, you have to pick one of those boxes, and they're very limiting boxes.
So, are you going to run for office in 2020?
This is the third time I've been asked this recently.
It's the last question I have to ask.
No, I'm not running for office in nothing. 20, nobody. No. No, that's not. I have no. To me, it just shows how bereft we are of leadership. That like.
We're just starving of, yeah.
Like, are you
yeah, but you're
wrong?
A curious person, so that
I am
half
a curious
the battle.
Person. But what about politics? Says it helps that it promotes curious people,
right?
You know, I just feel damn like the work that I can do is better from here, I think, than if I was like suddenly like, you know, like sitting behind a desk calling funders, asking them to donate money to my next election, even though it's in 3 years. But I have to get that started before I fix the potholes.
But you have a TV show, so that's half the battle also.
Yeah.
Because who's there now?
Yeah.
So,
That's true. Yeah.
You got one
already
check.
I already have a reality TV
Were
show.
Were you born in Kenya? Because that would be two checks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, and I won an Emmy, and our president didn't win an Emmy. So.
Oh, snap.
Shade.
Excuse me. Well, W. Kamau Bell, thank you so much for being on Bitch Talk. Sorry I forced you into it, but I'm not sorry.
No, I'm not sorry. And I was kidding. I was happy to be invited, and thank you for making it easy for me.
Of this course. Has been so fun.
Thanks for the flowers and the champagne, and now I'm going to go to sleep.
Okay, and good night.
Good night.
That was our friend, W. Kamau Bell, and CNN host, just chatting it up with him last year. It was our 300th episode that we released, and we were really stoked to sit down and speak with him. He's a wonderful person. So if you don't follow him or don't know him, please do. Please follow him. He's really live on Twitter, so you can find him at Twitter, and we love him so much. Don't forget, you can find us at bitchtalkpodcast.com. You can also find us every Monday morning on BFF.fm from 5:30 to 6. You can also find us at Cobb's Comedy Club on Sunday, September 8th. We are helping to promote a show called Really Funny Comedians Who Happen to Be Women. We will have on the show Irene Tu, Natasha Muse, Sandy Steck, and it's hosted by Chelsea Bierce. You can find those tickets at cobbscomedyclub.com, and we hope to see you there. Bitch, please!